something that leaves a deep scar on any nation involved. Angola is the second largest oil-producing nation in the sub-Saharan African region, also an OPEC member, and currently responsible for the production of around 1.37 million barrels per day and around 17,900 million cubic feet of natural gas, making it yet another lucrative market for foreign oil companies. Much like Nigeria, Angola also sees the likes of Total, Chevron, ExxonMobil and BP playing active parts in the exploration and production of oil and gas in the country, sending huge sums of money out of Angola in profits and once again demonstrating just how foreign exploitation is part and parcel of African life. However, in spite of a civil war that lasted 27 years and the impact of emerging as an independent nation, things have taken a turn for the worse for the Angolan oil industry, with the coronavirus bringing drilling and exploration to a near standstill, reversing years of work in just a few months. Angola also saw one of the most significant cases of corruption in history as Africa's richest woman, Isabel dos Santos, daughter of former president José Eduardo dos Santos, was exposed as being involved in a corruption scandal that saw her accused of stealing billions of dollars from Angola's financial assets via Sonangol, something that she denies, yet has had a clear impact on the Angolan economy. The scandal, however, did not stop Dos Santos trying to run for president nonetheless, much to the distaste of many. In response to the debt crisis, Angola had to secure $3.7 billion of loans from the IMF and currently owes billions to China, holding the single largest bilateral debt in sub-Saharan Africa.
All right, we're going to now move to our final package of this show, in which we're going to take a look at how oil is having an impact on the wider African continent. So stay tuned.
The rest of Africa is no different from the case studies we've mentioned already on the show. With both offshore and land-based wells and sources of oil and gas, there are rich pickings to be had across the continent when it comes to searching for such lucrative natural resources. For many of the world's major oil companies, short-term solutions aren't necessarily on the agenda when it comes to justify the drilling, as the long-term energy benefits are often considered first.
If you look at most projections or energy outlooks well into 20, 30, 40 years, it's quite clear that oil is still likely to be a dominant source of energy. So from that, on that basis, I think we're confident that there is value in doing what we're doing.
There's also the factor of costs when it comes to research and drilling. As we know, major issues such as the environment are all very important points when it comes to drilling for oil. Yet for the oil companies themselves, the research and development that goes into scouting for oil is also an important factor, but is something that is also done with profit in mind. Yet it seems that one of the major factors when drilling and extracting oil and gas from Africa that we don't hear so much about in places such as the Persian Gulf or other major oil-producing areas is the effect of pollution. Right across the board, the effect on the people of the region, the wildlife, the water cycle, and the impact on the local economy, which can be both positive and negative, all play a part when it comes to the extraction of such precious resources.
Known as the cradle of life, Africa is also the breadbasket of the world and, with its rich and diverse selection of commodities, has been the target for many Western nations and corporations. Yet, at what cost does this exploitation take place? With the displacement of people, the destruction of the environment, and the pollution of water, which is the most vital source of life, how then can foreign companies continue to get away with what is essentially environmental murder? With the likes of Recon Africa, the voices of opposition have shown us that there are ways of raising awareness and fighting the act. But in all reality, regional governments should be the ones taking a stance backed by individuals rather than, sadly, the other way around. That's about all the time we have for this episode. On behalf of myself, Kwame Tawe, and the whole team here on Economic Divide, stay safe.
In the Limelight.
As new coronavirus cases and deaths surge in the United States of America, the combined number of confirmed cases among people incarcerated in immigration jails and state and federal prisons has surpassed 250,000, according to federal data and the Marshall Project. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Mike Ludwig Ryder. This article is published under the heading COVID cases in U.S. prisons and ICE immigration jails surpass 250,000. Here's the details. The United States has the world's highest incarceration rate and largest systems for locking people up. As soon as the COVID-19 pandemic began, experts and advocates warned the virus would be amplified by prisons and jails, where social distancing is impossible. Ventilation is often poor and people are more likely to have underserved medical needs. The virus, they warned, would spread quickly both inside and beyond prison walls. They were right. As new cases and deaths surge nationwide, the combined number of confirmed cases among people incarcerated in immigration jails and state and federal prisons has surpassed 250,000, according to federal data and the Marshall Project. The number of cases has more than quadrupled since July, and infection rates have steadily grown since September. During the week prior to December 8, 2,224 new cases were reported nationally, an increase of 10% from the week before. At least 1,665 incarcerated people have died due to the virus, although that may be an undercount because testing and reporting practices vary widely across various prison systems in the U.S. In the spring, activists demanded that local sheriffs, prison officials, and immigration jailers release as many people as possible, if not everyone, and implement clear pandemic protocols. But advocates say decision makers did not move fast enough. Instead, prison officials and local sheriffs downplayed or simply ignored the crisis, some of them wrongly believing their facilities would be immune from a virus impacting the entire globe. There were modest dips in incarceration rates during the initial months of the pandemic, in part because some wardens and sheriffs refused to take new prisoners or judges ordered the release of the medically vulnerable. However, the decarceration process has been slow and inconsistent across various prison systems, often prodded along by court orders, frustrated state governors, media scandals, and the sheer reality of the pandemic. Now, incarceration rates appear headed in the opposite direction, even as the pandemic reaches its most intense phase to date. Population drops at state prisons slowed or reversed over the summer, and the number of people held in local jails is the highest since April, according to the Prison Policy Initiative. Public health experts are pushing to prioritize prisoners as vaccines become available. But activists say we must rethink mass incarceration altogether. If incarceration stopped violence, the U.S. would be the safest country in the world, said Louis Webb, a Healing Justice Coordinator for the American Friends Service Committee, AFSC. Instead, we have 2.3 million people in cages while our communities lack access to quality health care, education, employment, addiction, and mental health services, and an approach to justice that actually addresses the root causes of violence. More than 66,000 prison and immigration jail staff in the United States of America have tested positive, and at least 112 have died, according to reports and available data. These workers return home to their families every day, potentially bringing the virus with them. Prisons and jails topped the New York Times list of largest outbreaks in last summer and early fall. And research now shows that the virus has spread much faster in parts of the country where prisons and immigration jails are located. The Prison Policy Initiative estimates that mass incarceration added 500,000 COVID cases over the 3 months of summer as outbreaks behind bars spread into surrounding communities. People released from jail and prison often return to lower-income communities of color, which are disproportionately impacted by mass incarceration and the COVID-19 pandemic, according to the National Academies of Sciences. Between May and August, jails run by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, and its contractors alone were responsible for about 245,000 cases across the U.S., according to a new report from the Detention Watch Network. The consequences of ICE's callous disregard for the health of people and detained and its own staff were magnified many times over by the uncontrolled spread of COVID-19 in communities across the U.S., said Gregory Hooks, co-author of the report in a statement. Counties with ICE facilities were more likely to experience outbreaks of COVID-19, both small and large, in the spring and over the summer. The impacts rippled outward, extending to nearby communities and counties. The number of people caged in ICE jails ballooned under Trump administration's harsh crackdown on immigration and set the stage for a COVID-19 crisis. In April, a federal judge in California ruled that ICE delayed its pandemic response with dangerous results and ordered the agency to review its decisions to incarcerate people at particular risk of COVID-19 complications due to health problems. In October, the judge issued a terse clarifying order after finding that ICE had fallen short, and its review of custody decisions was a disorganized patchwork of non-responses or perfunctory denials. Other courts also rebuked ICE and the private contractors that run many of its jails. In August, a federal judge ordered ICE to stop transferring people to an immigration prison in Farmville, Virginia, after the facility saw an outbreak of 339 cases, according to Detention Watch Network. In late October, a judge in California ordered an ICE prison in Southern California to reduce its population by 250 people to make room for social distancing. The list goes on. At least 1,909 people have been released from immigration jails under court orders, according to ICE. ICE now reports that 16,163 people are incarcerated in its jails across the U.S., down from an average daily population of over 50,000 before COVID hit in 2019. However, ICE reports that it has released only 900 people with medical conditions that put them at risk of COVID-19 complications after reviewing their immigration histories and criminal records. The population drop is likely driven by pandemic restrictions at the border, preventing asylum seekers and migrants from entering the country and being detained in the first place. Mora Villalpando, an organizer with La Resistencia, a group led by undocumented people that works to end the deportation and incarceration of immigration in Washington State, said the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma only recently began releasing immigrants under the court order from April. The immigration jail is run by GEO Group, a for-profit prison company whose revenue is shaped by the number of people incarcerated under a contract with ICE. They really didn't do anything until maybe now, Maura Villalpando said in an interview. ICE reports that one person has tested positive for COVID at the Northwest Detention Center, but Maura Villalpando says her group has reports of additional cases inside the facility. A man was recently put in medical isolation after suffering chills and a fever, but a report submitted under court orders due to ongoing litigation claimed the man was asymptomatic, according to La Resistencia. Maura Villalpando said this is another example of ICE attempting to cover for its inability to control the virus and why people still incarcerated at the jail fear for their lives. Now that ICE is finally releasing people from the Northwest Detention Center and other immigration jails across the country to make room for social distancing more than 6 months into the pandemic, Maura Villalpando said it goes to show that thousands of people were needlessly incarcerated under the Trump administration's border crackdown. The population at the Northwest Detention Center has dropped from more than 1,500 to 300 in recent weeks. The hunger strikers and La Resistencia are demanding that the remaining 300 people be released, starting with the most medically vulnerable. Activists across the United States of America are holding actions calling for release of prisoners during the pandemic and pushing new visions of public safety under the hashtag #FreeThemAll.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Beep.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. And in this program, we're going to look at some principles of upbringing children so that the audience gets a detailed description of the matter concerning how to raise the children Islamically. The main source is the book Children in the Quran and Sunnah, compiled by Ayatollah Rai Shahri. And we have in our studio guest speaker, Sister Salma Khalfan, who is an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear sister.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for inviting me over.
Thank you very much for joining us today. In our previous sessions, we have been discussing on self-esteem and how and why it is important to instill this in our children, and this needs to be done from when they are young, and you know the importance and how it affects them in the long run. And we have been talking about many things, and what we had broken off with was how to, you know, respect the child and how to build that self-esteem in them. And some of the things you mentioned was, you said always speak positive about him near others because we don't want to ruin their self-esteem, because it's very important for the child to know that he is, you know, appreciated and he's important and he is smart and all of this. Basically encourage him. So you were telling us more about this.
Yeah, I wanted to also mention that when you are teaching him about this feeling of achieving something and striving to achieve success, thinking positively about himself and highly about himself, then you can also join with him and take interest in his projects.
Okay.
One way to, even if it's a small child in, for example, preschool, if they're doing a craft work, join hands with him and do the craft work together. That'll make him feel that there's a kind of a group work that will make us achieve something very beautiful in the end.
Yeah.
He will feel that he could do it. And you know, certain children, if they are given so much support from a young age, you'll see them so independent when they grow that they don't need now, you know, for you. I know of a parent who was homeschooling with her children, and she had very smart children, but of course you need to guide them, right?
Like, yeah.
Read this page and, for example, discuss with them what it is. And she really wanted to the children to do well, because the community would know that, you know, these children out there did the homeschooling and they excelled. So it's a possible thing.
Yeah.
In an environment that was not a good environment for the school, especially because there were male teachers and everything. So I remember that the children were so studious in the end, because the mother gave them so much support in explaining, doing activities together, taking interest on their work, that one of the child also said in the end that, I don't need you to explain me, now I know everything. Like, she couldn't, you know, she got the hang of it. So it's very important in that way. Even very hard principles like in physics and maths, if you go and see, if you are with them, they will be able to track down
themselves. Give them that support.
Yeah. Or studying. If you study with them for the first years, you know, you feel that my child needs me to study with him. I don't know, he's not good enough. He wouldn't perform well if I don't study with him. No, do it willingly. Mm-hmm. Ask him questions. And I remember there was this person in my life, of course, she was so studious that when her parents were doing, like asking her questions, and she used to answer them back, she wrote her whole book of questions and answers herself.
Mm-hmm.
Because she knew, she got the hang of it, you know.
Yeah.
So feeling, sharing that sense of the feeling that, you know, I'm there with you. I'm sharing your ideas with you. I'm sharing this studying with you. Yeah. So later on, the children become very independent. They don't need them, you know, and that makes them very, very successful. That's a way to set this sense of positive thinking in yourself to build this self-esteem.
Yeah, thank you very much. So we're just going to take a short break, and inshallah, we will continue this interesting discussion.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear audience, to IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. This is Islamic Upbringing. So we will be talking about self-esteem and how we can build it in our children.
Other way of building this self-esteem is making him familiar with stories of great people. I love this story about Allama Tabatabai.
Yeah, I was thinking of the same story.
Would you like to say that?
Yeah.
Say
so there was this time where he was not very good in, you know, Arabic grammar, and it was very difficult for him in the classes, and the teachers would tell him, you know, you can't do it.
Like, yeah.
They could see that it's just not working. And then how he, you know, right now he has written Tafsir al-Mizan. It says that he tried and he worked harder and he did tawassul and he tried all the ways. I feel like we just feel like we're limited. Well, there is, Allah has kept so many ways for us, just saying knock on my door or try harder and all of this will work out, you know.
Yeah, so we have such examples that, you know, the road is not closed. It's always open for us, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Allah is just waiting for us to struggle.
Exactly.
However much you struggle, you get that, you reap the same benefits. So, you know, telling children stories like this, especially when they're growing up and they feel that they can't achieve the best.
Yeah,
you don't
exactly.
Have to tell
giving
them that,
this, you
yeah,
know, boosters.
This, exactly. You don't have to tell them that you have to be the best in your studies or marks. The main thing is that you struggled.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main thing that Allah counts, you know, as the sawab. So, of course, when they struggle, they would achieve something in the end. Although it might not be the best, but they would still achieve a great deal out of it.
And Allah helps those who help themselves.
Exactly. So when the children are young and rely on parents to, for example, read to them, then read them, use this good opportunity to read inspiring stories of great people to them so that they can get a picture of how certain people behaved, how their manners were. So, alhamdulillah, these days we have many Islamic books available, and parents should make good use of them. Even when reading secular stories, for example, search stories that would inspire the child towards good virtues. Don't, you know, something that is just a waste or just two animals talking just like that. No, there must be a moral behind it.
Yeah.
Now, another factor to boost the self-esteem of a child is sometimes the child is wishing some things. So you have to listen and abide by his wishes also.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's very important.
Like wishing in what sense?
For example, a child is opposed to what the parents wishes him to do. Like, for example, enforcement of bedtime or wearing some appropriate clothes or going for a particular outing. The child may have a different view as to what should be done. So a good parent would listen to what the child has to say. So, and sometimes even, you know, comply to what he has to say. So, for example, if the bedtime is at a certain hour, okay, that is not so late, and the next day is a holiday, maybe you can give him a 20-minute extra just to listen to his wish. Make him feel important. Or if he doesn't wish to wear a certain clothes in the winter and he wants to wear instead some other winter clothes, it's okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes you should show him that respect, that you are important also. You can make your own choices.
Yeah.
This will make him make his own choices also and be a good decision maker.
And he'll also feel that my choices and decisions were respected and I was, you know.
Yeah. So it does not mean that the parent gives to the child anything that he wishes. It only means that the parent respects the child's opinions. Although he may not necessarily follow it, but he respects it. He even discusses about his wishes. Then don't you think if this happens, this will happen, if it's not appropriate wish?
Mm.
But if there are some wishes, for example, long-term wishes, that I wish, for example, we would go for a long drive, or I wish I would go to Karbala, for example,
exactly.
For ziyarat or something like that.
Yeah.
So We should explain these wishes and tell him why it's not possible, or maybe it could be possible, or we should pray that it can be possible. Then encourage him to wish such things, you know. We can teach a lot in the process of a child wishing. And also we should give him a sense of hopefulness that everything that is wished is heard by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So make your wishes very strong and make your wishes also very sensible.
Yeah, definitely.
Because sometimes you may get your wish and you might regret it. So be very wise when you choose a wish.
Very true. Thank you very much. So we're just going to take a short break and inshallah we will continue this interesting discussion.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Raise your children to have three features: love for your Prophet, love for his household, and reciting the Quran."
Welcome back, dear audience, to IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. This is Islamic Upbringing. So we will be talking about self-esteem and how we can build it in our children. And right now you are telling us that, you know, the importance of enhancing the self-esteem and making them feel that they want to aim for the best. And right now you are telling us that, for instance, we want them to, you know, aspire to become the best. They should wish for the best and they should wish good things. So you should always be there to listen to them so that you can, you know, guide them.
Exactly. Now, I would like to give the listeners some practical tips of the do's and don'ts of fostering this self-esteem. Okay. So I'll start with the do's. So give your child responsibility at home to get this self-esteem. Give him basic duties to perform according to his age, of course. To do around the house. So it's important that the child feels that he's part of the house and he's needed also in daily works going through the home. Also encourage him that he has done a very good thing. For example, if there is a 9-year-old girl, you can encourage her that, you know, your work is to lay the table and to take the dishes and wash the dishes. That's it.
Mm.
It's not a big thing. It takes about maybe 15 minutes. But if you do it, this is the rewards. For example, Allah will grant you so much reward in the process.
Yeah.
And we will have so much, you know, like extra time, for example, to do other things, right?
Yeah.
Because
exactly.
When everybody divides the works, everybody gets their share to do, and you will become so responsible that if, for example, suddenly if we have guests, you can help me around.
Yeah.
That gives, you know, when a person falls in nature with what they're supposed to be doing, then they really excel. So, for example, a woman, you should train a woman, a girl, to do certain things of her likes. For example, responsibilities, as in cleaning or maybe cooking some favorite things like cakes and bakery things, you know, that she likes. So that you can put her in that phase of becoming a woman. And when she does according to how she's created, then she'll really have the satisfaction in life.
Yeah.
Because she's following that way of her khilqat, her mode of khilqat.
Exactly.
Yeah. Rather than doing other things, for example, if she's very sporty and she wants to play karate and do her things, and I don't have time, I'm going to class or I'm learning this, this language or things like that. She's not getting into her system of being created the way Allah wants her to move around and to become perfect due to that, walking towards that path of perfection. So it's very important to give a child some responsibilities, be it a girl or a boy.
Definitely. And I feel like we should try and work on this, because sometimes we're not able, or we don't know how to, you know, administer these kind of things. If we tell them, you know, do this, do that, they feel like, well, we don't want to do it. Or, you know, how will we make them want to do it and make them feel good about it?
Join heads together also.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you very much. And this has been a very interesting discussion. Unfortunately, that's all the time that we have. Thank you, dear audience, for joining us on this program. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir, and visit us at our website, parstoday.com. Inshallah, until the next episode, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Food for thought.
Salam to you all. Since people in the Christian West are approaching Christmas, which they believe to be the birthday of the virgin-born prophet, Jesus, peace be upon him, here is a passage from the blessed household of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, relating God's admonition to the Messiah. O Jesus, you were created by my word. Mary gave birth to you at my command, that I sent to her by my spirit, the trusted Gabriel of my angels, until you grew up as one alive and walking, and all of this was in my foreknowledge.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Dear friends, Salamun Alaikum. So welcome to this program entitled Today's Special. We're going to speak about loneliness in Islam. Today, Monday, is the 6th of Jamadi al-Awwal, 1442 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 1st of Day, 1399 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 21st of December, 2020 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. As usual, we bless this moment of today's special by recitation of Chapter Ar-Ra'd, Verse 28 of the Holy Quran.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم الذين آمنوا وتطمئن قلوبهم بذكر الله ألا بذكر الله تطمئن
Those who have believed and whose hearts are assured by the remembrance of Allah, unquestionably, by the remembrance of Allah, hearts are assured.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
One of the most common diseases of the present century is worries and anxieties, for which various reasons have been mentioned. The symptoms of this disease include isolation, depression, inferiority complexes, and purposelessness. Briefly and concisely, such cases as feelings of guilt, fear of death, being brainwashed by the family as to the lack of one's power to cope with problems and his lack of knowledge of those things, and jumping to conclusions are some of the factors which cause anxieties and can be adequately dealt with by Allah's remembrance, His power, His amnesty and His favor, which all bring one's peace of mind.
Sometimes I can't see where I'm supposed to go. Sometimes I speed up when I should take it slow. Through all my hard times, when I lose my way, you're concealing my mistakes, yeah. I know you're always by my side, never turning out your light. When I need you most, your stars will shine.
Overcoming loneliness, we're speaking about. Almost everyone experiences loneliness at some time in his or her life. There are many factors that contribute to feeling lonely. Making a major life change, such as leaving home to go to college, ending a relationship, changing jobs, or moving to a new geographical location can put a person in a position to experience loneliness. When we are separated from familiar people and places, we often feel disconnected, like we don't belong for a time. Usually, as we meet people and become familiar with places, the feeling subsides fairly quickly. The real culprit, though, is how we interpret being separated or alone. Intense feelings of loneliness are generally accompanied by thoughts like, I don't have lots of friends because I'm not really worthy of them, or I'm not interested enough to be noticed. People with low self-esteem often believe that others would not be interested in knowing them and that their loneliness is evidence of their weakness as a person.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bi nasta'in. In this episode, we are going to be concerned with loneliness and the dangers of loneliness and how to cure loneliness. Some people may have to endure loneliness. Suppose that someone finds that all members of his or her family has gone on a trip and he or she is alone at home. Now, how should one treat this loneliness? Some people may resort to telephone conversations with this or that friend, or some people may want to watch a good film, to see a film, for example, on TV, or listening to a program on radio. At the same time, we find that some of these methods of getting oneself out of loneliness prove very helpful, but the best type of cure for loneliness is having communication with God. And in the Islamic religion, we find that being accustomed to or developing the sense of reciting the Holy Quran or reciting various prayers, it may be a good way to fill our spare time.
Coping with loneliness in this part. Don't let your loneliness drive your decisions. Experiencing loneliness is very agonizing and can push us to need a quick fix to take the edge off or numb the agony. This desire can be so strong that it dims down our voice of reason and drives us to make reckless decisions. For example, when we are lonely, we tend to compare ourselves to others. What we need to do is to try to be more careful when we are comparing ourselves to others. We can remind ourselves that we have no way of fully knowing what is happening in somebody else's life, and that things may be vastly different behind the scenes. By exercising self-restraint and establishing good practice, we can make sure not to let our feelings of loneliness take the wheels of our life, and instead take the edge off using simple cost-free ways, such as talking to a family member or reconnected with an old trusted friend, learning how to dismiss unpleasant or unwanted thoughts, and practicing meditation techniques like mindfulness.
Reflecting on different Islamic topics, short commentary of the Holy Quran, Hadiths of the Infallibles, lessons from the life of the Infallibles, all in today's special from IRIB English Radio.
The unexpected blessings to being alone. We come alone, live alone, meet Allah alone. The circumstances that left us alone in the different stages of life were not random. We always wanted an older brother or someone else to be there to rescue us from the solitude. But the solitude came with a blessing. Being alone gave us the time in which to wonder, think, and eventually understand the people around us. We are born alone, and we took our first breath alone. We will die alone, even if we are surrounded by our loved ones. When we are lowered into the grave, we will be alone. Accepting this can help us make use of our moments of solitude rather than fear them. Having the courage to be alone builds confidence, strengthens conviction, and propels us to do what is right and pleasing to Allah regardless of human approval.
There are a number of dangers that come with loneliness, my dear brothers and sisters. First of all, it does damage to your physical health. Let's start with the heart. Loneliness takes a toll on the heart. It applies pressure on your cardiovascular system because it increases the stress hormone, which is cortisol. When you go through loneliness, the stress hormone, cortisol, is increased. When that is increased, it applies pressure on your cardiovascular system, and it applies pressure on your blood vessels, damaging them. It damages the heart and it damages your blood vessels. That's a danger that millions of people today are suffering from. It even weakens your immune system. Loneliness has been proven to weaken your immune system. It's very interesting how it does that. The way that it does that is that people who feel lonely and they suffer from loneliness, they consider the outside world a threat to them. Everything is threatening. They don't feel safe. They don't feel comfortable. Now, when you focus on external threats, your body starts to focus on bacterial infections as opposed to viral infections. SubhanAllah, that's how the body works. When you feel threatened, your immune system is weakened because now your body is more concerned with bacterial infections than viral infections. That means you're less immune to viral infections, and that weakens your immune system. Just feeling lonely weakens your immune system.
Dear friend, thank you for joining us. This is the end of this episode of today's special. Inshallah, we'll continue this topic on the next episode. Be with us. Fi amanillah.
Yourself. Can't you see this wonder spread in front of you? The clouds floating by, the sky so clear and blue, planets in their orbits, the moon and the sun, such perfect harmony. Let's start questioning ourselves. Isn't this proof enough for us?
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.